I'm calling, convening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue Wednesday, June 5th. We have four items on our agenda. We are not taking them in the order in which they are printed. We are going to have two quick work sessions first. I anticipate these will go quickly. I'm opening the work session on House Bill 2174A.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. 2174A deals with urban renewal projects, and if you recall, this is particularly dealing with public buildings. And so when public buildings come out of urban renewal status, then they don't generate revenue on the tax roll because they're tax exempt. And so this bill would, it does a few things. It gives a straightforward and consistent definition for public public buildings, and requires that three out of the four most affected taxing districts approve the urban renewal plan that includes public buildings, and gives a sort of timeline and streamlined process for the reports that are included in that. And then there's just a dash two with some technical language that specifies the meaning of a permanent rate plan and essentially modernizes and adds some conforming language for the different legacy rate plans for urban renewal districts. And this has a minimal expenditure impact and no direct impact because these are permissive programs.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, I move the dash two amendment be adopted into HB 2174A.
Representative Marsh moves the dash A2 amendment adopted into House Bill 2174. Any discussion? Objections? Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2174A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves House Bill 2174A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objections? Motion passes. For the time being, I'm assigning the carrier as Representative Marsh, but that is subject to some further consultation with the House Committee on Economic Development and Trade. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2174, opening a work session on House Bill 2128.
Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2128 is the bill that would, the original version redefined the definition of a tax expenditure and required LRO and DOR to put together a report on the definition and handling implicit sunset dates for tax expenditures. What you have in front of you, and we had discussed a dash one before, but what you have before you today is a dash two, which is simply replacing that bill with just the study. And the reason we went that route is when we went to look at the exact tax expenditures that could potentially be affected in the next 2 years, there was only really one that might be a tax expenditure. Ledge Council strongly disagrees that it is a tax expenditure, so they wouldn't draft it that way. So we kind of got back to that whole. It's very fitting that it kind of turned out that way with the issue at hand. So it replaces the bill, just requires DUR and LRO to produce a study and make recommendations on proposed legislation for tax expenditures, definitions, perhaps the structure of the tax expenditure report, so it's more useful information, and to really try and get around these implicit sunset date issue. So there is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
And no solution yet. Thank you for the report.
Chair Nathanson, I move the dash two amendment be adopted into HB 2128.
Representative Marsh moves the dash two amendment adopted into House Bill 2128. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask or suggest that as part of that, will there be kind of continued, not just DOR, but LRO, but perhaps bringing in LC to further those conversations in some sort of forced cage match in order to resolve those differences?
Forced cage match.
Did you want a response to that?
Just a suggestion. Just wanted to get that on the record.
Take that under advisement.
You do it right out here.
That's a nice way of saying.
Representative Reschke, can you top that?
No, I'm fine. Thanks. I'm good.
Seriously, would you like to add to the discussion?
No, I'm fine. I'm not going to follow that.
You will. Any other discussion? And we're still on the amendment?
Any objections?
No.
Motion passes.
Karen Avinson, I move House Bill 2128 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves House Bill 2128 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Representative Findley, would you carry this one?
Yes, ma'am.
Be prepared for questions of the carrier. Let me close the work session on that one. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2128. Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, may I vote on House Bill 2174A? I apologize, I was late to committee.
Without objection from the committee? Thank you, Representative Smith. How do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have completed our work sessions. We will now move to a public, let's quickly do an informational meeting on House Bill 2264. And committee, I expect this will be pretty brief unless there are new topics that come up for discussion or additional questions from you. House Bill 2264 was about farm equipment tax exemption. And House Bill 2264 had discussion in this committee, discussion in our offices, discussion in the hallways. There was a kind of a work group or stakeholder group that was convened to try to work out some alternatives or an amendment that would have been acceptable, a type of consensus agreement, I guess you might say. And I was disappointed that that process didn't yield a result yet. There was not final agreement. It appears that we will not be able to take action on House Bill 2264 this session. And I have been in conversation with one of the advocates from one of the stakeholder groups, a representative from a stakeholder group. There's a suggestion that there be a work group in the interim, and I agree that this is important. It needs to be resolved. We just don't have the resolution yet. So in the spirit of that, I would appreciate it if Legislative Revenue Office would come back to this committee with a recommendation for how to convene and handle a work group over the interim that would yield something solid that we could consider in the next legislative session. I would like the work group to begin with a review of the difference between personal property and real property, and what was the legislative intent when that part of the statutes was developed. Because it's becoming increasingly more obvious to me as a newer member of revenue than some of you, that the distinction between personal property and real property is perhaps starting to blur as the years go by. And so let's see, how did this get started and what was the intent? I would also like to make sure that the work group is going to discuss issues of a level playing field within an industry or between different sectors of an industry, and a level playing field across the state. I would like to make sure that issues of equal treatment are considered. And I would also like the work group to contemplate how we end up in a situation where assessors in some counties can come to one conclusion and in other counties come to another conclusion, so that the statute is applied differently from one county to another, and also how even within a single county, individual property owners might perceive that there has been different treatment. We should also, in this report from LRO about the work group's work and how you would recommend structuring it, we need to be aware of whether recommended changes are going to reduce revenue to either the state or counties and other local jurisdictions, or whether overall, statewide, whether it's revenue to the state or revenue to counties, whether overall the suggested language would represent more or less no net change in revenue, that it really is truly just for clarification and address equal treatment and so forth. I'd also like to be sure that the results of the work group and a bill that we would see for the next session do result in clarification for the farming community. And if they are going to vary from the original intent of how we identify personal property, that we have a really good rationale for why we're changing what we think personal property is and how we define it. There's an awful lot to take up in that work group. So I'm not surprised, really, in a way, that we didn't come to any conclusions, that we didn't see an amendment that was a consensus amendment yet. These are big topics. Representative Marsh.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think you've laid out well what a work group could accomplish. I just wanted to add a word. As the assigned liaison to the work group effort, I think we had three meetings. And I want to emphasize that we failed to come to a conclusion not because of what I would characterize as internal dissension. Really, the group was working hard together and cooperatively to get to a place where we thought we would have something we could all agree upon, but really just because of the late point in the session in which we began that work. I think it's a group that clearly understands what the mission is, and with your additional instruction, I think it can be productive during the off season. So look forward to that.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Thank you all for your patience, and I'm sorry that we won't be having an additional work session on this bill this session. I'm closing the informational meeting on House Bill 2264. I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1045A.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1045A provides a property tax exemption to homeowners who choose to rent a portion of their home out to a qualified home seeker, a home share seeker. This is implemented through the development of a home share program. It is a permissive measure, and it sunsets on January 2nd, 2029. And I believe there are people here to testify about the details of the program.
Thank you. Yes, we have several people signed up to testify. I would like to call up first Ryan Fisher, Homer Williams, and Phil Donovan.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, Vice Chair Finley, my name is Ryan Fisher, and I'm here today on behalf of Harbor of Hope, which is a nonprofit that is working to end homelessness. They have been doing work by incorporating private and public resources to address homelessness. Some of their recent activities include a navigation center in Portland and also mobile shower units. One of the things that we are looking at in throughout the housing world, and some of you know I work on housing quite a bit, is just the lack of available units. There are folks who are coming to nonprofits who are seeking housing, and the lines are long, and the number of places where folks can go is short. And so one thing that we've seen that has been successful in San Mateo, California, is the utilization of home sharing. And this in particular has been successful with senior populations. And this is, senior populations right now are the fastest growing homeless population in the country. And you see people on fixed incomes who are struggling to find a place to live. And these aren't, when you think of someone who is homeless, these aren't folks that are chronically homeless. These aren't folks who have had mental health issues. These are folks who have been on fixed income, maybe their spouse passed, and they're living in their cars, and they've never been homeless before. There is a need for housing for these folks. We can build housing. We need to build housing. We are building housing. But in the meantime, we need places for folks to go without hammering a nail. And so we've got many underutilized bedrooms around the state that if folks can find a compatible place, these arrangements could be very successful. There is new technology that has been very successful at finding compatibility. It's called SilverNest, and it's been rolled out in a couple parts of the country with a lot of success, in Denver and in Southern California. They have placed about 10,000 folks in each of those places. And in the case of Denver, the average rent of a one-room apartment is between $1,300 to $1,500 a month. The average home share rents for about $800 a month. And so all of this is just being done, you know, through this compatibility software, which has a lot of other features to kind of help make sure that these matches are good, and that over the long period of the time that they can continue to be successful matches. $800 is great, but there are folks who cannot afford $800 a month. And this is where Senate Bill 1045 comes in. Senate Bill 1045 incentivizes homeowners who are going to share a home in their room to do so at an affordable rate to someone who is of low income by providing a property tax exemption to someone who is willing to rent their room at this lower rate. A couple things I want to say about the structure of this. In order for someone to receive this exemption, they would need to be working with a nonprofit, a municipal, or a housing authority that has been authorized to run this program locally. This is an opt-in program, so counties or cities would need to choose that this is something that they wanted to do. It's not a mandated program. And the bill puts a lot of local control into the parameters of the of how they want to run the program. They can have parameters on the max amount that any exemption could be worth, parameters around the income eligibility. We put a few ceilings, statewide ceilings, on this because when we first started working on this bill, Legislative Revenue Office said, wow, this is a really good idea. I could see this going statewide, and all of these, started to pencil out how this would impact the entire state in terms of a revenue impact. And we said, well, we're just trying to get this going in a few places to get this off the ground. So what we've done is we've put in a limit that there could be no more than 500 homes that are receiving this exemption at any time, and that's a statewide cap. We put a cap on the total reduction in assessed value so that it limits how much a tax exemption for any given property could be worth. And we also put a sort of a ceiling on what the definition of low income can mean. So it can't mean anything above a 60% of median income. So you know, these are some of the pieces that we've put in there. We are very excited about the possibility of home sharing. There are a lot of underutilized bedrooms that could be homes for people. And right now, everywhere I look, voucher programs, nonprofits that are helping to house folks, the biggest barrier they're facing is a lack of places where people can go. And we think that this is a really innovative way to get there.
Thank you.
My name is Homer Williams. I'm the chairman of Williams and Dame. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay. I've been in the housing business for 45 years now. The primary market I had was baby boomers. We built them apartments in the 70s and starter houses in the 80s and bigger houses in the 90s and second homes. And now half of them are broke. They have nickel of savings. So what we're seeing here now is a growth in homelessness. The fastest growing group is 50 and older. The fastest growing group of bankruptcies, 55 and older. And we don't see them because they're embarrassed. They hide. They're in cars. They're in vans. They're with kids as long as they can be. And the problem is we can't build our way out of this. It is physically impossible. Also, it's financially impossible. And so all we can try to do is manage what's coming. And it's here today. And we're seeing it every day. And I've been working on this stuff for 2.5 years. And my interests are in things that can scale. Now this, I believe, I look at this as a trial. And to me, who's the market here? The market are two groups of people, the tens of thousands or hundreds in the state who are one paycheck away from being out of their house. The next downturn can be a bloodbath here, anywhere in the country, frankly. The Airbnb proved that people would take absolute strangers in their home over and over and over again. Who would have thunk, right? Why do they do it? They need the money. And this program, If we can get $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 to a homeowner, that can keep them in their home. And at the same time, we can keep someone from going homeless. And the most important thing is that inventory is here today. If we put 10,000 people in homes, and not all of the people, most of the people that we'll put in homes will not access this program. They'll be able to pay the $800. They just can't pay $1,500. They'll be able to pay a student. Could pay maybe $600, $800. 15% of all college students in this state are homeless. They make a decision. Do I live in my car or do I eat? And then they borrow money to go to school. It's not a great program we have going. But 15% of them are homeless. They're everywhere. And so the idea of the home share, really what we're doing, we're going back to the boarding house days. What we've got is we have a lost generation. The baby boomers, we didn't realize it. The 401k, we're consumers, we're not savers. And then you layer on top of that artificial intelligence. Who is it hitting the hardest? 50 and older. Verizon just laid off 44,000 people. You can imagine what the age was. They're not wired for the new technology. And so we're going to need a pretty big toolbox. And this is one of the biggest potentially, because if we could put 10,000 people, which I think we could over a couple of year period, that's like you guys spending $3.5 billion for something we won't see for years. The problem is everybody's raising money for housing. What do we do this year, next year, next year, and next year? That's where there are no plans. And so that's why this becomes so important. So thank you.
Chair Nathanson, member of the committee, for the record, Phil Donovan. We had a couple of folks who were able to testify on this legislation on the Senate side, but due to their schedules, we're not able to be here with you this morning. So I'm just going to put a couple of points on the record, and we'll follow up with letters. But first off, we had Laura Galena de Lovato. She's the executive director of the Northwest Pilot Project. They are primarily, as a nonprofit, helping house low-income seniors in the Portland area. She testified to the fact that they get 4,000 people through their doors looking for affordable housing options, and they're able to house 600 of them. And the point that she wanted to make to you is that even though this bill is pretty greatly limited in its scale as it's before you today, the 500 limit that I'm referring to, her point was, you know, even a couple hundred additional units would be meaningful to them. And then the second thing is Jimmy Jones, who's the executive director of the Mid-Willamette Community Action Program. So that's Marion County Community Action. You know, he pointed out to the Senate committee that in 2006, less than 3% of their homeless population was ages 60 or over. And in 2016, they're now over 5% of their homeless population is seniors. So, he talked at length about the challenges with that population, and then he pointed out that last summer they were consumed because up on Portland Road, as you're heading out of town here, there were two apartment buildings that were extremely low rent. And guess what? Most of the people living in it were 50 and over. Those two structures were purchased and were torn down to the studs and renovated, and everybody was evicted. New market rents went in. Community Action spent the entire summer trying to house those people. And his point was, you know, in a circumstance like that, home share might have been very helpful. Of course, they didn't have that tool. And so he pointed out that they've still got people who they're still trying to find permanent housing for a year later. So with that, the point is they want to give this innovative idea a chance, and that's why we're here urging your support for Senate Bill 1045. Thank you.
Excuse me, can I add one thing?
I'm not going to stop you.
Okay. As I've been speaking to faith-based groups, this is a program that I've gotten a very positive feedback on. You know, I was talking to the Presbyterian Church up in Portland in the Lloyd District area. It's a pretty wealthy church. They had three people go homeless from their congregation in the last 2 weeks. And this concept of churches even trying to keep their congregations because people are having to move out and selling their homes and those types of things. So the idea of this is that this needs to be a statewide effort, and our plan is to work through the faith-based groups, the Rotaries, and because there has to be an education component to this, which we're working on with the nonprofit. So, okay.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gentlemen, thank you for sharing. I definitely see the value in what you're proposing. One thought I have, and I don't know if it's valid or not, is I could see folks who perhaps own a home but are vulnerable out of desperation, bringing in folks who may not be a good fit in the home or safe or have history that would make it challenging to be in that home. How do we protect naive homeowners?
Well, number one, it really is important that there is an education component. But my belief is if you give people the right information, then that's the key. If they have the right information, you really have two adults making a decision, a business decision in one sense. And so what would, the program that we have is there's a complete background check, criminal work history, credit history, all the way back on both the renter and the homeowner. And then each of the renter and homeowner fills out this compatibility questionnaire that goes into great detail. I mean, I like rock and roll, and I go to bed at midnight, and, you know, Beethoven, and I read. Probably not a good mix, or I've got two dogs, and I don't like pets, you know. But it goes into much more depth than that. And then you have to have a way to unwind it. And so as long as you can do those things, you know, then you're going to have a pretty, I think, high degree of success. You know, if you look at, again, I get back to Airbnb, you know, it's the reason I got excited about this is that if you need the money, wouldn't it be better to have maybe a companion rather than somebody you're making the bed every day and you're scrubbing out the bathroom every day and you're, you know, you're in business. So to me, there are a lot of reasons, and we'll learn a lot, frankly. You know, students with seniors, we think that that could work really well. And maybe they could afford $600 or $500 and do some work. And that's, and they can still eat and still go to school. Seniors with seniors, people that are just compassionate. So the nice thing is we'll be able to track all of this, and we'll know where there's success and not success and why it's not working. So,
Representative Smith, did you have a follow-up?
Well, I just wanted to follow up. I genuinely appreciate what you're sharing. I agree for the most part with what you're sharing. I support the concept. The challenge I have is a vulnerable person. The type of person who is going to take advantage of this perhaps is not going to be able to have a stellar credit report or a positive background check. And
that's the homeowner does.
We have a question from another representative also. Excuse me. And we have four people additional to testify, so we need to make sure we leave time for that part of the hearing. Hang on just a second. Representative Findley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I think it's an innovative idea, and to solve this problem we have, we need to be thinking outside the box. However, I'm a detail person, and it raises a few questions for me that give me pause for concern. One is land use compatibility. If we're becoming in a single family rural residential area and we're now having tenants issues, that may or may not be an issue. That there are just rocks to go over to get to where we need to be. But probably as much as anything, it's landlord-tenant relationship and responsibilities. An Airbnb, people come in, they typically stay, and then they leave. But now we're going to move someone in, and now they have landlord-tenant, if it's not a great fit, but they're under a landlord-tenant responsibilities, it's not easy to evict someone. So that makes it troublesome for the fit size. I agree with Representative Smith completely on the vulnerability stage. I mean, I think it could be a great fit, but it could be some. So your screening process is more critical to get through that.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Findley, one thing that we have is we can look at where this has been rolled out in other places. And I mentioned the 10,000 placements in Denver and in Southern California. One of the features that this compatibility software has put together, they've put together lease agreements. They have a mediation service that can be utilized. You are correct that landlord-tenant does apply, but it does also mean that if there is a lease violation, then that person will need to be removed. So it's not that you can't get them out if there is a lease violation.
Thank you. I'm going to stop you there.
Thank you.
This is a revenue committee, and we're talking about a tax exemption. And so I'm going to have some questions on the business side, not the social programs side.
That's my next question.
Thank you.
So my next question is in the exemption process, is it granted only during occupancy? Or is if when you file for an exemption and it says you got to be able to be three, so do you get a 12-month exemption when you meet that, or is it only during the occupancy period? And the second component of that is, do all taxing districts have to approve? Because the way the bill reads is all taxing districts have to know about it. Do they have a say in this and whether they should all approve, similar to the provision we had earlier on the urban growth boundaries on all concur?
So Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, my short-term memory is challenged, so I can answer the last question you asked, and then I may need you to cue me on the one prior. But in terms of the taxing districts, this is similar to other affordable housing tax exemptions, where if 51% of the taxing authority approves it, then it would apply to all the taxing districts. We looked at maybe exempting one district, and what we heard clearly from the assessors and others is, please don't do that. It makes things very complicated. And we did a lot of work with Department of Revenue and the county assessors to build this in a way that it could be implementable.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. On the business side of things, well, first, let me say I am very interested in this concept of making a match between people who have extra space and people who need to use the space. I think that's a really important goal. This sounds perfectly suited to a pilot project where there would be a grant to a county or more than one county to try something out. I'm not understanding how a property tax exemption is the right mechanism to encourage this type of program. So let me ask a couple more questions. Well, I'm just going to make a point. If I understand right, there are people who have a home with two or more bedrooms. They're using one. There's a vacant room. Let's match someone up, put them in there. This is someone who's not currently collecting rent. So now they're going to have the benefit of additional income because now they're renting it out. So this would be providing even a second benefit. They're getting an income that they weren't getting before, and they're also under this proposal getting a property tax exemption. So that's two sources of income, in a way, you might say, that they didn't have before. But there were references to how much this second room would cost. Is it really affordable to the student in need or to the senior in need that was nearly homeless or, in fact, homeless? Some of the examples you presented, it's like, well, if someone wasn't even charging rent and this was a vacant room, who's to say that they're going to start out asking $1,000 for a bedroom or $800 for a bedroom? Why didn't they start out and saying, I'd just like to provide space and I'm going to charge $300. I'm not understanding the economics of that. Who's setting the price, and is it appropriate to assume they would have gone from zero to $800 a month for this extra room?
Can I answer that? The market will actually determine that, I think.
In other words,
I think that there will probably be rooms. Denver averaged $800. My guess is our average is going to be somewhat less than that, but that's an average. So there are some rooms that are going to be $300 or $400 probably, and there'll be some that'll be $1,000. And but the market will determine what it's going to pay for. But what we're doing is taking where you have an average rent of, say, $1,200, and you're introducing new inventory at substantially less than that. And then this piece of it is where I use the example of a baby boomer now living on $1,300 a month, and after Medicare and pills and copays, probably $1,000. Maybe they can afford to pay $400 or $500, but that room would rent for $800. So then they would get a tax abatement that would make up from that, say $500 to $800. They would get $300 worth of property tax abatement, and they could afford that unit. But they'd have to be below 60%, and it would have to be coming through a housing bureau.
Good, good. All right.
Good. Thank Chair you. Nathanson.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And one more question. Yeah. We do have four more people to speak.
Just quickly, can you tell me who? So there's a whole formula that would have to be calculated. What the room is worth? How much is the property tax exemption? Does the matching agency do that based on some sort of calculation?
This is all left to the local jurisdiction to decide.
Okay.
And as an opt-in program, to your question earlier about is this the right mechanism, you know, the idea was is that this will let local communities decide if they want to pursue this. And, you know, we've had interest from Clackamas, Marion, and Lane counties in this idea, whether, you know, and then we worked very closely with Department of Revenue to figure out a schedule by which, because there is this 500 limit, by which counties or cities could say, we're interested, and then if you follow the legislation, then you know, there's a time period in which they need to signal their interest to Department of Revenue, and the Department of Revenue says, okay, well, let's just use for round numbers. There's five counties out there, and, you know, you each get 100 and go forth and do good, and then let's report back. So, yeah, that's why that mechanism was chosen, the opt-in.
And I think we need to evaluate is what is the cost of somebody going, what's that person homeless going to cost us?
Exactly. Yeah. And so we have
thank you very
other
much.
Policy committees who work on that also. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. The next panel will be Marcia Kelly, John Calhoun, Maud, and Jody, you'll come up next. So two of you, Marcia and John, and then Maud and Jody.
Yes, I wonder what Marcia and John are going to have to say.
Please begin right away.
You should come up.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, I'm Marcia Kelly, the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. This is sort of an interesting time to be testifying on this. I was just in San Francisco. San Francisco's on SilverNet. I have a niece who is going to be a sophomore at Cal. She is sharing a room. She's renting a room from someone. It was arranged through just someone saying, I need a room near Cal and going across the bay every day on BART. Nothing really unusual about it. It's a three-generation household, a retired university professor, a grandmother, and then my niece. But that aside, there are questions about this bill. Insurance liability, there's nothing. We could be leading people into finding out that their homeowner's insurance does not cover because they do not have landlord insurance. There are tax liabilities that we haven't really discussed because people are having additional income. Are they going to have to pay taxes on that? This is not anything new as far as home sharing goes. The property tax exemption is new. It says in the bill that the sponsoring jurisdiction will audit whether these room shares are appropriate. So that is yet another expense on the ever-shrinking property tax for the local jurisdictions. And those property taxes could be used for other things that those jurisdictions need to do, like providing housing subsidies or providing payments for their PERS liability. I think that we don't have a new concept about room sharing. We just have something that they think will incentivize people, and I don't think it will in the long run because they have other financial things they will have to do because they are sharing a room, like buying different insurance or not being covered.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Findley and Marsh, members of the committee. My name is John Calhoun. I'm speaking on behalf of Tax Fairness Oregon. Since this was brought up at the Senate, I have talked to Mr. Homer Williams' partner on this. I've talked to low-income housing specialists, and I've talked to the manager of the home sharing program at Ecumenical Ministries. I've come to the following conclusions. One is that there's a genuine need. The sponsors of this that you heard from are working hard to provide a solution that they think helps solve our housing problem. Two, home sharing is in fact the cheapest option available for housing. Three, the property tax credit assumes the financial incentive is the primary reason and need to solve this problem. The people at Ecumenical Ministries deal with a lot of other reasons, and it's not at all clear that the consultation approach that they use today, and their cost is $1,500 to $2,000 per placement, versus this, the assumption is a $5,000 per year property tax exemption, that the hand-holding and dealing with the issues that Representative Smith raised about how do you deal with having a stranger move in, not just for the night, but for a year or more, is dealt with. The property tax is not the total cost. We would be spending $5,000 in property tax, but we also have to spend the time for this, or the dollars to support the nonprofit housing authority that was mentioned here. The tax people have administrative costs. So the cost here is not necessarily the cheapest option to solve the problem. This test is expensive from the perspective that it's going on for 10 years. It will cost about $25 million, of which $10 million is school K through 12 school funding. So I would suggest that if you do feel that this is a worthwhile test, you cut the test, the length of this from 10 years to substantially shorter. Put in an element that says we need to collect data. There's nothing in here. If this is a pilot program, what's the result of the pilot? And compare it with alternatives. When I talked to the Ecumenical Ministries person, said the state was considering offering $2.5 million a year, which is what LRO has estimated, to add 500 homes. The reaction after some sputtering was, I could place a hell of a lot more people than 500 if I had $2.5 million. So again, a good program idea. The question is whether the property tax exemption and the way this is shaped is the correct way to do it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And then, are there questions? We have two more people. Thank you. Maude and Jody. And while you're coming up, anyone who has written testimony, you are welcome to provide it to Legislative Revenue Office by 5 o'clock this afternoon, and we'll make sure it's posted.
So I'm Jody Weiser. I'm speaking for Tax Fairness Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I have written testimony, which you should read, I think. Our concerns are pretty numerous, and John has already touched on some of them.
Leave some time for Maude.
Yes, indeed. But I think that one of the things that we read in studying this is a Sightline Institute paper said that in Vancouver, BC, 8% of households were home sharing now. They had unrelated renters in their homes. Well, if you put that across Oregon, there's already 100,000 households doing this without a tax break. That's so how do we distinguish the people who deserve the tax break from the people who are already doing it, who under the 60% of AMI probably would all fit now, a very high percentage of them would fit now. The 60% AMI seems too high if you're trying to focus the program. That's all of the brand new 1,500 people at the Amazon Distribution Center in Portland. They would all be eligible, but they could find rentals, they could find room shares within 30% of their income in Portland. So they actually wouldn't need the subsidy, but they would be eligible for it the way that the bill is written. It really needs stronger goal statements and then sideboards that would say what the goal, that would match the goal statement. So if we're trying to house college students, it should have an age limit in it. If we're trying to do seniors, it should have an age limit in it. If we're trying to subsidize the taxes, then you need an AMI of lower than 60%, 30 or 40% would make the roughly 400 per month make sense. And
I'm going to adjourn in 3 minutes.
Okay, I'm done.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, Vice Chair Finley, any friends of cowboys or cowgirls?
you heard that.
I love that.
I'm Maude Nerol from the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League believes that government at all levels must make available sufficient funds for housing assistance programs. This bill shines a most welcome light on home sharing programs, which several of which exist in Oregon already. Kangaroom, Roommates, Roomies, Zimper, Roomster, they're all, I just found them while waiting. But rather than hollowing out our property tax base, there is an alternative. Oregon's largest housing subsidy is its tax expenditure for the mortgage interest deduction. HB 3349 would remove that deduction from filers with incomes over $250,000 and those with second homes, and use the $150 million in additional revenue for affordable homeownership and homelessness programs. There is, administered by the state's Housing and Community Services Department. Some funds are already in that bill slated for long-term rental assistance vouchers and case management for the recipient of long-term rental assistance vouchers. That line could easily be amended to make it clear that that money could apply to house sharing. Here's an alternative with a funded mechanism for means testing that leaves intact our already skinny property tax. Thank you. Thank you for letting us speak.
Your statements and a reminder that if you have written testimony, you're welcome to submit it, any of you, by 5 p.m. today. Any questions for this panel? Thank you. I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 1045. Our business is done. We are adjourned. Okay.